The theater, the theater.
Bring out Louis!
Theater, theater.
To be or not to be.
Theater, theater.
Hey friends, how you doing?
Aha.
Well, hello.
Hey.
It's...
yeah.
Well,
it's
good to see your faces.
Yeah, you might hear a fourth voice with us right now. We'll introduce her a little bit later.
I'm
very excited about that one. There's a couple things I wanted to throw out there, though. What one is
Bring
that Spirited Away live the show, the theater experience.
Yes.
Is playing at AMC right now.
I know.
On the big screen for us to all go view, and I think we should all go. I'm just saying.
Yes.
I want to go. Isn't it coming to Disney Plus eventually?
Probably, yes. But wouldn't you want to see it?
I thought
it
that's
in
what.
A
no, listen.
Theater?
I want to see it at AMC. I want to use my A-list Stubbs Pass.
To be clear, I want to see it live.
Yeah,
sure,
dude.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure.
But I can't do that.
Go to Japan.
You could.
I'll just...
Yeah,
I could go to Japan. My brother lives in Japan. I could go to Japan if I wanted to. I've never gone. I don't have the money. I have a newborn. I really can't do it.
Well, they're doing it in London too soon.
Oh, that's, no shit.
Yeah,
I'll go there.
Well,
instead.
I mean, that'll be.
I don't know.
Really
I don't know
just
what
cost as expensive as traveling.
Oh yeah, Japan. Yeah. No, probably maybe more.
Yeah.
Totally.
The other thing I wanted to bring up is I went to Bart's Books in Ojai for the first time.
Oh, right.
I've been there. It's named after the cat.
Yes.
Lisa should.
There's No,
it's the bookstore that we would stop at with the kids whenever we did the show.
Oh, shut up. Really?
Yeah, the open air bookstore.
Virginia Avenue Project.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Yeah, there was I went to Ojai for the first time. I took the baby. Who we're officially calling Grogu on this podcast.
Grogu.
We took Grogu to Ojai just for the day trip, and we went to Bart's Books. And the theater section alone, I spent like an hour and a half, and I didn't even get through the first little bit.
Of course. Because
it's so jam-packed with like little tiny actors edition scripts.
Yes.
And
yes.
I was like, ooh, I should come back. But it is a two-hour drive, so, you know, you got to.
Pick your battles.
Pick your battles.
Pick your battles.
It's all good. Anything else you guys want to talk about? I know I took over. I'm sorry. But I bought a book.
No.
Theater of Revolt.
Oh.
Oh.
You'll have to let us know.
Bonds.
Robert Brustein. Yeah. Studies in Modern Drama from Ibsen to Genet.
Oh.
All right. Modern Ibsen to Genet, huh?
Or Gennett.
Gennett.
Maybe is how you say it. we love it here. Welcome to Theater Theater, the theater podcast for theater nerds, made by three theater makers from the LA theater scene. I'm J. Bailey Burcham.
I'm CJ Merriman.
And I'm Scott Leggett.
That's right. And each week we get together to discuss, debate. No, we don't do the other thing anymore. We discuss and debate the definition of theater through various lenses. And we're back to form once again. This is the finale of our discussion of the evolutions of the great playwrights. We're taking a macro look at three of the works of Brandon Jacobs Jenkins Jangleheimer Schmidt. His name is
name
my
is
name,
my
too.
My name, too. There we go.
Thank you. Yeah. This is part three of Podcast-a-roon. Excuse me. And Podcast-a-roon is what we
Thank
have named
you.
This miniseries. Yeah, you're welcome, CJ. Thank you. We try to name these things as sweaty as possible, and I think we have succeeded.
We did good, yeah. That was a good one for this, yeah.
We did a good job. We are joined this week for our finale by someone I'm excited to officially meet, and I'm sure you will be too. She's a local writer, director, actor. Correct me if I'm wrong about any of this. You may have seen her on shows like Barry, Shameless.
Nice.
Grown-ish.
Nice.
NCIS. Good Girls.
Nice.
Should I? And one of my favorite shows of all time, How to Get Away with Murder.
Really?
Oh. Yes. Right on.
My mother and I bonded on that show. Like, my mother and I haven't ever really enjoyed the same pop culture. And one day she was like, there's this show. I think maybe you'll like it. Like, I'm going to put it on and see if you like it. And by the end of the first episode, we were like, oh, this is the greatest show of all time. And we watched every single episode. So I'm a huge fan of yours. We'll get there.
Awesome.
She also recently co-wrote and co-directed another thing I've interacted with. Welcome to the Blumhouse Live from Amazon Prime, which was nominated for an Emmy. Her play Sumo will be co-produced by La Jolla Playhouse and Ma Yi Theater Co. in 2023. That's this year. When is that happening?
We open October 1st, I think.
Holy crap. Oh, well, wow. We'll make a trip. We'll all be headed to La Jolla.
That's a good field trip right there.
Yeah, she has a million more accolades worth mentioning, but for time's sake, I'll put them in the show notes. check her out. Check out her bio. Welcome, Lisa Dring. How you doing, Lisa?
Welcome, Lisa.
Hey, welcome. Wow, what? I mean, oh my God, I've never heard it read out loud like that. I'm like, I need you to follow me around.
I'm the hype man. Yeah, I'm the hype man.
The hype man, yes.
Yeah, I'm the one.
You did it with Casey, too, on part one. You did
I'm good at it. Especially for people I'm excited to meet and people that I love. Like, I really am just, I'm like, oh, okay, let me make sure people know who we're talking to here.
Heck yeah.
No, but we're really, really excited. I think I overheard before we started recording, you're somewhere working on something now. Can you talk about that? What is that?
The Pittsburgh, yes. I'm working with Quantum Theater on a show by Jennifer Chang, who directed The Everybody. I was in at NTS.
Amazing.
This one's directed by Kyle Hayden, and it is an immersive interactive show that is based on the tale of Faust.
Oh.
It's like a retelling of a retelling, and I play the devil.
Okay.
Yes.
So we got a week left of shows. It's going super well. And yeah, I'm in Pennsylvania soaking up the Steelers and shit.
Yes, love it. Yeah.
Country. That's great. That's amazing. Yeah. That's super cool.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Apparently there's like a legit theater scene there. Past guest Natalie Nicole Dressel did a whole screenwriting program out there.
Yeah.
That she said
Carnegie Mellon,
changed everything about.
Yeah, Carnegie Mellon's huge with it, and University of Pittsburgh's got a really good department and a lot of money. Carnegie Mellon's got a lot of money, so
the theater stuff.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I mean, people think about Pittsburgh, but they forget, like, Andy Warhol's from Pittsburgh, August Wilson's from Pittsburgh, like,
yes,
so there's
Christina Aguilera.
Yes. Great. Give love, you know, but there's a great art scene there and a great energy and passion for art in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
It's really good. Yeah. They're really good here.
I also feel like it's one of those places, like, we talk a lot about theater is everywhere. People always kind of want to put it in, well, it's Broadway and then London and then a bunch of regional theaters everywhere else that, like, do mediocre work. And it's like, no, there's amazing theater happening everywhere, and people from LA go and do it sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, it is worth traveling to these places to do theater. It's very important. We've done whole episodes about it. I'll step off my soapbox. But Lisa, it's so, so good to have you here. Quick, before I introduce the play that we're talking about today, how much have you interacted with Brandon Jacobs Jenkins before Everybody?
Well, so it's funny. I was emailing this to CJ, and I didn't know if I should say this because I am no expert, but he's actually my favorite playwright. So I've seen,
wow.
I saw Gloria. I saw An Octoroon when I was at Soho Rep.
Hell yeah.
I saw Appropriate/Appropriate at Actors Theater of Louisville. And then I did Everybody. And the reason I did Everybody is because he's my favorite playwright. I haven't read Neighbors, actually. That's the only one I haven't hung out with. But it's funny because I haven't really read that much. I've read Appropriate/Appropriate again, and I visited Octoroon a little bit in preparation for this, but really it's just through seeing and admiring the work. And one of the reasons I love him so much is because his work is so different every time.
Mm-hmm.
His style, yeah. You know, he's fluid.
Yeah, and he's exploring so many styles, and he's grabbing. I think there was a New Yorker piece that I read where they described him as kind of a DJ. He's taking old school, he's taking this and that, and he's mixing it in some.
Oh, you mean the New Yorker who he used to write for?
That he used to write for.
When he was like 21.
When he was like 21, right out of college. Walked out of Princeton and got a job at the New Yorker. You know, no problem. No big deal.
No big deal.
But yeah, it just how interesting his mind is and how interesting his ideas are and how he combines his ideas. He's on top right now.
Yes.
Well, and something I'm really enjoying about him too is you can tell he wrote for the New Yorker because he is a writer for the reader as well, because reading his stuff is entertaining just as much. Well, I don't know about just as much, but like his plays are fun to read. They're also really fun to see, but you can see his thought process in it sometimes too, which is a lot of fun too. Yeah,
absolutely.
Wild is like everybody though is written very spare for the stage directions compared to the others. Like there's, you know, there's that big skeleton dance in like, there's a big ass like dancing and it's very like open. Like you can do whatever you want, which is almost like, it's like a hint of a blueprint as opposed to the stage directions, as opposed to more of a formal map that you see that I've seen in other work.
Absolutely.
That's a really great analogy about a blueprint. I've talked about him writing manuals as opposed to plays. This is your instruction on, and Brecht did that. You know, this is how you're going to present this
Brecht
thing.
But Brecht reads like a manual.
Brecht reads like a manual. I agree. Brandon. Totally agree.
It's a little tougher to
and
get
Brandon
through.
Brandon reads like a play. That's the thing.
Yeah.
It's like, he's handing you an instruction booklet of, you know, but things that are also fungible. That's the best part of all of it. Okay, we'll get into it. The whole point of the thesis of the podcast is the evolution of playwrights, right? So we'll talk through the three plays at the end, but I want to make sure we introduce this play. This is Everybody.
Everybody.
Based on the 15th century?
You got it. Yeah.
15th century play. Yeah. Everyman, which I have a story about, which I'll tell in a second. But I want everyone to know what Everybody is about. I want everyone to know what Everybody is about. And the way we do that here is we ask CJ.
Yes.
CJ's breakdown.
A modern retelling of the medieval morality play Everyman, where the main character, Everybody, as well as supporting characters are picked and cast by lottery at every performance. It tells the journey of an individual being faced with certain death and how they handle it, look back at their life, deeds, family and friends, and ultimately realize that we all approach death alone.
Yeah.
Boom. Yeah.
One of them old morality play things.
A morality play.
So Everyman, the original play, is by
Anonymous.
Yes. I remember that always, like, in college and theater school, when somebody hands you that for the first time, or you open up your giant book of plays that they give, what was that called?
Yes.
You
know?
Yeah.
And you find Everyman, they're like, it's by Anonymous, no one knows. And you're like, whoa. Theater. So I pitched, there was a, at Wichita State University, okay? They had like a, young directors could come and direct in the season. And so I pitched Everyman. And I had this whole take on it to modernize it. This is 2013. And I was like, let's modernize it. Let's turn it into like a college thing. He's a college dude and everyone's in beanbag chairs and it's going to be super fun and everyone's going to love it and it's going to be immersive and blah, blah, blah. I got it. I got to do it. I cast it. I started working on it. I was working with designers. We had mock-ups. And I got in a little bit of trouble.
Oh, no.
Didn't turn in a paper.
Okay.
What?
Oh, no.
I was getting my second degree, and I was in this theater history type course that was one of the worst classes I've ever taken. Like, the teacher was just so not...
Dry.
Didn't actually care. Like, we were teaching ourselves. It was a lot of just like PowerPoints and like, okay, and like sitting through, and I was like, I don't care about this. So I had to write this like 20-page paper and I was like, I'm not writing that, and I just didn't do it. I was someone who did that a lot. I still passed everything. Okay, I did fine. But I just hated doing the homework. So when something came up that I was like, that's not gonna serve me, I just wouldn't do it. And I didn't turn in a paper. She went to the head of the theater department and was like, you cannot let him direct the undergrad show.
You can't.
He didn't turn in this paper. It's a huge paper that everyone has to write. He didn't do it, and he's refusing to do it. Now, I never told her I was refusing to do it. I just kept saying, okay, it's coming. And I just never did it. So it's not like I was like putting my foot down and being an asshole. I was just like, oh, yeah, sorry. Oh, man. Yeah. And so they pulled it from me, and we didn't get to do the show. And instead, they did The Faith Healer, which is a play I don't like, maybe because of the situation. But
I
saw
a Brian Friel play.
Yes, correct. Oh, wait, no, it wasn't Faith Healer. It was Trojan Women. They did it at the same time. That's what I thought it was. It was Trojan Women, which made me even more upset. That's beautiful. Sorry. Okay. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. But so I know every man.
So in other words, you're saying Brandon took your idea.
No, not at all. What were you asking, Lisa? Did you ask something?
Oh, do we have to curse your professor? Do they have a name?
Yes.
Like
yes.
Them?
Yes.
Yes.
That look you just had.
Judy Babnick.
Judy. Damn you, Judy Babnick. Damn you.
Professor Babnick.
That stuck it
she's
to her.
She's
a doctor of theater, and she...
A doctor.
Worst teacher I've ever had in my life. But she did her thesis on, or her, like, her final whatever for her PhD, her dissertation, whatever, on the effect of LSD on actors.
Uh-huh.
And okay. That tracks for her, because she's...
did she hang with Jodorowsky?
Not while they're acting, but, like...
Oh, did you, it
like long-term effects? Like, do actors who have done LSD have a different experience than actors who haven't? Or like, I don't know. She was always like really shy to talk about it, but then would like drop hints and we'd be like, okay,
sound
the
weird.
Answer.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know. I have no idea what the findings were. We should find her dissertation.
Go find
they're all public, right? Isn't that the whole thing?
Yeah, you can get it.
Judy Babnick, Dr. Judith Babnick. Look it up. I think she's gone now from that school. Anyway, should we just talk about Wichita State Theater Department for a little bit?
We're talking about Everyman.
Everyman. Yeah, so I know the play intimately. I did a lot of work on it. I pulled back up my whole binder that I had, my director's binder, and sort of refamiliarized myself before I read this play. And so that was just sort of my context with it. But CJ, Scott, did y'all know Everyman or did you know everybody? CJ, you saw Everybody, right?
I saw Everybody with Lisa in it.
Wow.
The night I saw it, Lisa played Friendship. Cool. And I actually have questions about when you played what later on. But I was just made to read Everyman in my freshman year of college of major dramatists. So that's pretty much it.
Yeah, same. I had my freshman teacher made us read it. And then there was a production of it done at Alabama Shakespeare Festival, which is normally a very good festival. And so he insisted, he dragged like seven of us to go see Everyman at the Alabama Shakespeare Festival. And it was awful. It just wasn't.
Oh, no.
It wasn't.
It's so short.
Huh?
It's so short.
It's so short, but it was awful. It just didn't have any imagination to it. It was just like, oh, we're going to stand on stage and kind of vague period costumes and say it. And we finished and we walked out of the theater and the professor turned and apologized. Walter Shipley, God love you, brother. He was just like, I'm so sorry I brought you to this. And he took me to see a lot of cool theater and we saw a lot of cool stuff, but that wasn't great. But yeah, I was fairly familiar with it, but hadn't re-examined it since college.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I was just wondering. It's just one of those theater school things that I feel like everyone ends up.
Yeah, we all have to go through it. But
okay, so you brought up CJ the rotating cast.
Yes,
I think we start there.
Yeah, that's a great idea because I want to know about Lisa, your process.
Yeah,
rehearsals like
for the listener? At the beginning of the script, it says, This play is written for a company of 9 performers of varying generations and gender and ethnic identities. The exact breakdown of roles should vary from performance to performance via lottery or some other element of chance. So I guess the first question I have for you, Lisa, is how did y'all do it?
We did for real the lottery.
Wow. Okay. So like but, drawing so from my
there
hat
was
every
some...
night?
We did little balls, like little lotto balls.
Bingo rolling thing. Yeah.
Holy shit.
Fibbery, but that the actors don't know about. Like the actors weren't aware of, but we figured it out. There was a tiny bit of fibbery at the beginning and the end to sort of create equitable, you know, like if someone played this for 8, basically we found out that the balls weren't really equal. And so some people would end up playing some things a lot. And so that changed it around. They like changed the weight of the balls to try to counteract that. But at the same time, you had no idea who was going to play it. And you all had to learn 5 roles, which isn't, it's done at a lot of colleges in the past few years. And that's sometimes it's like you all play everybody and you have your other role, like friendship or cousin, you know, but we learned all 5 roles.
Oh, wow.
Very cool.
How long was your rehearsal process for that?
I think it was normal plus a week. Plus a week. I can't really remember, but it wasn't like a hugely different. And the idea was we came in mostly off book, you know, like it was a heavy, heavy lift. So, you know, some people were totally off book, not me, but I was close. And, you know, but yeah. Very familiar with the script, end quote.
Quickly, fast, do it quick.
Yeah. Kind of have to be, yeah, like, shit.
You only played the role like 3 or 4 times, sometimes 2 before you opened.
Right.
Oh wow. Yeah. I was curious, and you kind of answered it, but did people end up playing like the same thing over and over again? Was it pretty evenly parsed out? Or, I mean, it was kind of by chance, but kind of not.
Yeah, I played fucking Kinship so much and I was like, curses to this part. And I feel so it was chance, but because like chance is so relative, like, it was like, oh, because certain, like literally they spray painted the balls, but some spray paint was like thicker. So some people would end up playing a role more than others, but then they changed it so that it would be more equitable. So it was strange the way it came out. But at the end, I think we all played everybody a few times. And certainly some people were hanging out more in some roles than others.
Mm-hmm. What was your favorite?
Well, everybody's a weird one, right? Because it's the big one, but also it's hard to do without a lot of, like, you learn so, it's like, you know, you learn so much about it in the run, but it's kind of the same amount you would learn about it in previews, right? Because you play it like 3 times, 4 times. Right, so, you know, some people 5 or 6. So it was like, that's great. And it's also a wildly heavy lift. And so I would say that one, though, we're all like excited about that one and scared. And then friendship and stuff were really fun for me.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Thematically, I think critics early on didn't really get it or like it. They sort of saw it as a acting exercise type thing. There was a lot of lukewarm kind of like, oh yeah, actors probably love this shit, right? And and critics hate that, right? But I was reading about it, and thematically, apparently what he's trying to do is he's playing with the randomness of death. Right? He's playing with the randomness of life. Quote unquote, right? So I think that's kind of interesting, but I do wonder if, as a person only seeing it once, does that, and CJ, you saw it, like, does that still affect you? Do you still get that randomness? I mean, I know the lottery of it all, but you could, as an audience member, just sit there like, yeah, but they're not, you know, this is all fake. Like, the lottery is even fake, you know?
Sure. Well, I can say for myself as an actor and getting the gist of what they all had to do, it made me feel nervous as an actor because that is a lot of heavy lifting and just standing up there every night and being like, okay, which one is it going to be? Because I'm sure, like you said, Lisa, there's parts you prefer. Maybe there are parts that made you feel more nervous. So as a fellow performer, it made me feel nervous. I thought Antaeus and I've obviously don't know any of the other cast lists that have come out from this production. Everyone that was cast as everybody was very different. Mm-hmm. So that excited me, the thought of like, oh, this could be different every night. The night I came to see it, the person that played everybody was the older white man. And I'm like, but this is who I think you would traditionally see in Everyman. And I personally was more interested in seeing anybody else play that role. It was still great and I still enjoyed it. But I was like, I almost wanted to come back and see somebody else play that role.
You should have. Maybe that's kind of the thing too. It's kind of smart actually, marketing wise, to sort of be like, and if you came back tomorrow, it'd be a totally different thing.
And then each actor's got all their friends that they got to try and make come back. It's like, no, but I might be everybody tonight, man. You got to come.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, and in colleges they do rig it so that like your parents come on your everybody night, you know. Yeah, but like, it was really hard to invite people to the show because But like, I love the show, and so that's it. You know, that's an interesting aspect. But you know, how many people do come back? We definitely had people come back, but like, even if I fucking love shows, I don't go back, you know?
Sure.
So,
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. And so let's talk about the role of everybody. So this starts out with a pretty massive monologue, and many more to follow, but the opening, a direct address to the audience, which actually he does in Octoroon as well.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. Yes. And I just wanted to say, like, this is something that's been fun about covering this playwright is the ones that I've come in and read for the first time, like Gloria, and then seeing an Octoroon and seeing everybody, I'd never looked at the scripts. I didn't really know anything about them other than things that people had said to me from time to time. So when the usher comes in at the beginning and starts doing a curtain speech, I immediately thought about Scott because I was like, this curtain speech is going on for a really long time.
Because I hate them.
And then there was...
I hate curtain speeches. Hate them.
But then there was also the theater of, and I was sitting in the front row, the usher keeps talking about turn off your cell phones. No, turn them all the way off because someone can call you twice and your phone can ring. And I'm always the person that's like, well, it's on silent and I put it on do not disturb, so it'll be fine. And I was the dipshit in the front row that like I was the last person to pick up my bag and turn my phone off because the usher made me nervous enough to turn it off. But then it's just the whole morphing into like, oh, we're getting in. This is the play. This is the theater. So Brandon really got me in that part for sure.
Well, and it goes to Octoroon as well. The way he sprinkles metaphysics into stuff, sometimes more in some plays than others, but he's so smart. And that's another criticism I've heard of the play too, that he almost tries to get in too many ideas. He's like a Tony Kushner in that sense, where it's just like, I'm going to stack my stuff in here and challenge you. But I think that that's how he's challenging you, is that, and I've said it many times on here, I love a playwright that's smarter than me, which is most playwrights, but somebody who's like clearly just intellectually above me, I'm going to learn from at some point. I imagine I'll be re-examining an Octoroon and this for years, like, and look forward to productions of both.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The direct address at the beginning is something I don't always, when I started reading it, if I'm being completely honest, I rolled my eyes really big because he had already done it in Octoroon, and we talked a little bit about like he's all of his things are so very different. But right at first, I was like, wait, is this a retread? He's direct addressing. And then he's doing something that is in a lot of plays, actually, doing the curtain speech in your script. Specifically, there's this one called it's a Durang group of one acts called Durang Durang, Christopher Durang.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's Durang, 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 Durang. That was one of our songs. And there was a, the opener is called like Mrs. Sorkin or something like that, or Mrs. something another. And a woman comes out and gives like a address to the audience about theater etiquette. And then she later plays the mother in For Whom the Southern Bell Tolls, which is their his Glass Menagerie spoof.
Right.
And so it's at first I was just sort of like, eh, high school theater, here we go. Why are we doing this? Like, I don't understand this. What are you doing? But then you're right, CJ. What you said is kind of interesting. It goes on like really long. And it goes to a point where you as an audience member start kind of being like, okay, yeah, it's getting a little academic. It's getting a little like you, like I talk a lot about, I went to see a show at Cupcake Theater. Sorry to talk shit, Cupcake. I love you. But every time you go see a show there, the artistic director comes out and speaks to you, but not in like a normal musical theater way. He comes out and teaches you how to clap and teaches you how to like, interact with the show.
Lisa's face says,
"Yeah, says it all."
Say that again. I don't know Cupcake Theater at all. I'm sure they're great, but I'm mad.
Yeah,
they're fine. They do fine work, but the problem is when you come out and you say, and you're already sort of antagonizing me and being like, "Hey, audience, we've had audiences that weren't clapping. You need to clap. So I'm going to teach you." And we're like, what? But they do it every time. This isn't, it's not like they were slighted right at the matinee and now they're yelling at the evening. This is like a constant thing for them. And I kind of get it because Los Angeles doesn't really know how to watch theater, but I also hate it as a theater goer. And so it felt like that, but it kept going and it kept going. And I started thinking about Everyman as this like academic, moral, like, fucking maypole of like
right
shit, you know. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm with you. And then he sells you on the whole rest of the show. You're like, okay, cool, yeah. And then I had to remember this is a lottery too. It's theater, it's a theatrical, it's he's even almost playing with it, the fact that it's feels like educational theater.
Yeah, I agreed.
Right? Do you feel that? Seen it, to be clear. This is all just from reading it, where I'm like, I feel like I'm in college again reading the play I'm about to do.
Right.
And not just because I worked on Everyman in college, but truly, like, that's how it felt.
Well, that's what I was going to ask Lisa, in terms of like just table work, just establishing work early in the rehearsal process. What were you guys focusing on in terms of themes, in terms of energy? What direction were you going there?
We got up on our feet super quick in this because of the number of people we had to cycle through. So our table work was also on Zoom, and then we like got in the room and got to playing. So I remember feeling like we didn't do a whole lot of chatty, which was interesting for me because I love the chatty. And like, you know, we talked about the original text, but not everybody had read it, you know. And I think a lot of what Cherish did, I mean, Cherish was the woman who played Usher very beautifully, but they went and like formed a lot of it on their own, and then she came back with it. So we didn't see how that was cooked, but it was really interesting too, because the somebodies, which I was one of five, we watched it every single night. And
right.
So I also counted that, and people are super mixed about the utility or the efficacy of that. Like, you know, some people still hate it. Some people, like, even if they got it, like, I have theater friends who are like, I loved it so much. It was such a, like, winky theater fun thing. But, yeah, it does prime you to be like, this is, like, a stodgy academic thing. And then it goes bananas. So I think that might be the intent of it, right? To bring us super into, like, a really button-up energy before it explodes.
Right. And, you know, and that's, I think, one of his things that he's talking about is what is a play? What can theater do beyond, you know, beyond just talking, beyond just being a thing? And I think that, I don't know if he's always successful with it. I don't know if I'll really make an opinion about everybody until I've seen it. I feel like I have to see it. Although I clearly get the gist, but it's that challenging of not just his bigger ideas socially, philosophically, but literally theatrically. Like, what are we doing? What are we talking about? And how are we talking about it? That, I mean, I don't think we've seen his thing yet. You know what I mean? Like, I think his masterpiece is still to come. And I'll be interested to see how he evolves. Ah, it's part of the show.
I think you're right. I mean, really, what's funny about this podcast is we normally are often we are covering people who have passed, playwrights who have passed, mm-hmm. right? And we are able to look at their entire works and their body of works and say, okay, this is their trajectory and this is their evolution and that is set in stone. There's no hidden plays that we know of, right?
Right.
And, you know, we've talked about a few that were at basically this point in their career and then passed. Specifically, Sarah Kane is one who and she's maybe even earlier in her career than this. But it still is like, it's cool to be able to see an entire person's trajectory. But every time he comes out with a new play, I feel like we should revisit him. Because of what we're seeing in terms of differences, what would you all, I want to hear from each of you, put you on the spot. Mm. What would you categorize as like his evolution because they are so different? I mean, he's obviously, it's all surrounding theater. It's all surrounding race. It's all surrounding America and its issues. But what would you, how would you categorize his evolution? That's my broad question. CJ?
Wow. Don't make me answer first. I want to hear everybody.
I think that his experimenting will solidify in time, you know, because he's, you know, I that New Yorker piece said that, you know, he's looking at Sam Shepard and Hansberry and Eugene O'Neill and Brecht and August Wilson, and he's pulling those voices out, and his ideas are so big. You know, we talked about in An Octoroon, the idea that one of his theses is that we, theses? Thank you. That we don't quite have the language to talk about race. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's what's interesting to me. Like, you look at Tony Kushner's evolution as sort of a vague comparison. You know, Angels doesn't come in early in his career. It becomes in sort of establishes the middle of his career. And that's why I think, you know, Brandon's not even 40 yet. So what's he going to do in his
40s? He's like my age. He's like 37 or 38. Yeah.
He's a young man.
I'm too old, y'all. I could see it being, thank you for answering first, Scott. I need to get my thoughts together. Yeah. I could see it being the opposite. I could see him saying, you can't tie me down by a style or a theme or a something. I'm going to study everything, look at everything, sample it, and do my own twist on it. Because I came into this already knowing An Octoroon and everybody, and reading Gloria knocked me on my fucking ass. Like, I was ready for it to be something meta, breaking down the fourth wall, blah, blah, blah. And it's not. Like, right. I don't know. I could see him constantly trying to reinvent and retry things.
Yeah. What do you think, Lisa?
Well, so... it went Octoroon, Gloria, everybody, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Correct. Yeah.
And then he has this, the Bacchae, which he did with Yale.
Right.
Which I don't know heads or tails of.
No, me neither.
And I don't think any of us have read Neighbors, right?
I've seen Neighbors.
You have, right. Okay.
I mean, honestly, I'm going to say this, and I really like everybody, but it's my least favorite of these three.
Mm.
So I felt like he, and I loved Appropriate. And Octoroon, and I feel like he had more skin in the game with those. I thought Gloria was amazing too. Everybody is something. And it's, you know, like you were saying, Scott, like, you know, it's a play that makes you think. I will still think about Everybody to this day and be like, I wonder if that's what it's about. Like when I'm studying Zen Buddhism, he talks about that in the beginning and I'm like, oh, right. Is the skeleton dance the Makyo? Like, is it the Hell Realm? Because I don't fucking know what that was about, really. And I
that was a question for me, too.
Yeah, like, And I think the tone of it is a little strange, and the shape of it is strange, but the shape of every man is quite strange. So I think that everybody still is a mystery to me, but it didn't feel quite as personal or on edge psychologically or emotionally as the other ones we're talking about here. That's not to say that him as an artist is changing. That's just to say that I'm not tracking it temporally in that way.
And that's also interesting.
Like he did that Kinship, like, you know, who knows if we'll lose him to TV, right?
Right. Let's hope not. Or that he just, you know, he dips his toe in and then comes back. And
He can do both.
Please do, Brandon, if you're listening, do it all, please. We just need all of your art. Yeah. Lisa, you said he might be your favorite playwright. Yeah, which is your favorite of his? And I might be stepping on our thing.
It's crazy, I didn't even read it, but I saw Nocturne at Soho Rep, and like viscerally some of the, like there was that moment where the fucking wall comes down, and Soho Rep's quite small, and there was cotton all over the floor, and like, it was like the wall came down and air came up on our faces and cotton like hit your face. There's that crazy tomahawk scene that has like, it was like a rave scene, and he takes a tomahawk and they put on a strobe and he starts fucking dancing like an insane person. And that's right before the wall falls down. Then the music like goes to this like splendid high point, and then he stops and the wall falls over him so that he's in the door frame, and you like feel this air come at you. Like theatrically, it was one of the most visceral and gripping, and like in the medium with the message, not only the message fucked with my brain, but the medium itself fucked with what I thought was possible.
Fountain did not do that.
Yes.
Fountain did not.
Anyway, I've heard so many things about that, but honestly, I didn't go because that production at Soho Rep is my one of my top three of all time. So I was just like, I want to keep that for myself.
Yeah, exactly.
That makes sense. And we talked a lot about the Fountain production in our first episode because our guest Casey Rogers was in that production, and we got to talk a lot about it and we gave it a lot of praise. But I did want to say on this episode, I also had trouble with it in some ways where I did feel like it lacked in the theatricality that you're describing, Lisa, that would have been really exciting to see. And maybe it was budgetary, maybe it was directorial choice, but it just felt a bit stark. And so everything, the starkness actually made it all feel even heavier and worse and kind of gross, rather than it being theatrical and rejuvenating and inspiring. And, you know, it felt a little bit like, it felt a little dead that way. Just wanted to say that because threw a lot of love that way, but
But plus the challenge of doing it outdoors. It's not an outdoorsy show necessarily, and if you are, I think you need to really think about, you know, adding a bit of spectacle, like Lisa described, that would help sell.
And
that.
Obviously, it was COVID. But that's
it was COVID times also. Yes.
Yeah.
Listen, I loved that. That they cast.
They had a possum that walked across the stage. They had fires. They had so that's the budget right there. That's the theater we asked for.
A real fold on a real possum.
Yeah,
yeah.
They didn't mean for it to happen. They just were theater by the dumpsters and the possum.
So much.
Yeah. CJ was there.
I was right at the top of Act Four. The possum walked in and they stopped the show because it walked across the stage and all the way across again to exit. So it was fun.
The last thing I kind of wanted to say about Everyman, and then Everybody, and I want everybody to kind of get their final say, or if we have anything else we want to dig into, we absolutely can. We got a little time. But I wanted to say not much really changes from Everybody from Everyman to Everybody.
Yes. Mm.
It's like very much this. I mean, he's got some different character names in there that are kind of a more modern colloquial terms, like fellowship becomes friendship and goods becomes stuff and that kind of stuff. And then at the end of the original, good deeds is the only thing that you can quote unquote take with you.
Right.
I mean, And the original is like a billboard for God, right?
Yes, so yes, it's very much.
And it felt very much not like a spiritual play to me. Everybody is like a postmodern. It's like for a play about death, it is devoid of God, yes. I felt.
And this is where I was headed.
How do we fucking talk? How do we do an adaptation in a godless, or at least a very speculative eye toward God society, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The thing that was performed, everyone was like, well, we go to church. You know, like, everybody yes. believed in that thing.
Well, and that's what these were, right? The morality plays were plays to be performed for the church, for the mass, for the, you know, I mean, that's kind of what it was, and more than anything. And then they were commissioned by the church to get in their pageant wagon and go spread the word, right? Tell them about God. He's great.
Evangelize.
Yes. Yes. And the Bible says, yes.
And what I took away, what I really dug, being the good atheist that I am, is that he changes out God for love. He changes out the church for love as sort of your thing, which is even harder to talk about in terms of, you know, just theater and how do you talk about love? How do you talk about God? God's a little bit more easy to talk about because we personify God, you know.
Right, the anthropomorphized God, right. Right. But he even kind of pokes at that. And even at the beginning, the way it's sort of introduced, the usher, quote unquote, everybody said, you know, like, and then now is God, and then whatever happens. But they take the piss out of it, and then you're right, it's devoid of God as a tenant or
an aspiration or as a focal
an
point.
Overlord.
Yeah, that's all sort of sure. Yeah, CJ has the piss.
Let it out, CJ. Let it out.
Scott is a good atheist. We love I'm God an angry atheist.
Love God on this podcast.
Well, and in the play, God, every time God is mentioned, it's in quotes.
Right.
Exactly. Yes.
Didn't honor in the playing of it, but would have been really funny.
Right. You know. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. But it's
God.
It adds to those layers that he's got the intellectual capacity to write about. You know.
Right. To your point, Scott. At the end, you can't take good deeds with you. Forget good deeds. Like, yes, good deeds are good. Good, great. But what you take with you is love.
Mm, yes.
Now, if love is... Now, a good Christian would say God is love, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
A good metaphysicist might say love is the universe. I might say... yeah, love is everything, right? And so I think that is what struck so true for me finishing this, thinking, yeah, okay, and then good deeds, and we do nice things for people, and then we go to heaven, and great. And he's like, wait. And especially if you know the original morality play, he's talking to you in a small way. There's that little bit of Easter egg where he's just like, hey, it's not that. It's love. This is what you take with you. So spread love, give love. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of refers back to the big racism discussion that kind of just like gets plopped in the middle, the big dollop sour cream of discussion in the middle of this play. Yeah.
Well, and in this, go ahead, Lisa.
Okay.
In this production, his grave was a dumpster. So I thought I really liked that. My biggest takeaway from this, and I guess this is also me being an atheist, my favorite line from this play, and it said towards the end, the usher says it, why is it these plays about death always only ever wind up trying to tell us about life?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it was the concept of stop living your life for your death, live your life well because you should.
Yeah.
Meh.
Agreed.
Meh. Because it's the right thing to do.
I want to say to the point about the talk about race in the play.
Yeah.
Well, because they talked about race and they had these interludes where like it would be all dark and we'd be, you know, it was like written A, B, C, D, and they'd fight about basically who can say what. And some people misspoke. And then they're like, that's fucking racist. And it's like, you're a fucking racist. I'm not a racist. And I actually think it was a meta conversation about identity politics more than race because of our phenotypes changed each night. Yep. It was really funny when the two white people and the somebodies were yelling at each other about being racist. Calm down, you know? And then it was really interesting when like, you know, like it would switch every night. And so my feeling was that it was actually about how we get stuck in these ideas of race and identity. And that's actually just crazy bullshit.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, Brandon talks about at the beginning of the Octoroon, like how he tries to write just a fucking play and everyone thinks it's about race. He does talk about race a lot, I think.
Sure.
I think he sort of is trying to look at our sort of obsession with identity politics, and also probably as a Black playwright, being like, oh, can I have any discussion other than this?
Yeah. We Absolutely. Talked about that in the first part too, that so much about, and you really see it in Neighbors, especially, it's almost didactic in how he is talking about identity as a Black man in academia, today in society, and what he has to be and what the expectations are with that, and then what the world sees when they look at him, you know. He very much is focused on identity.
I feel though, like to that point, we were talking about how it can be like stodgy and academic, but it's like, you know, in the Freudian, like he's got this super ego where he can talk in this like really, you know, cognitized way. And then he's got this relationship to the id where people are fucking feral and crazy. Like that mix on either edge of the spectrum is super interesting to me.
Absolutely.
Always plays out that mix of that where it's like really, really intellectual, but then that often goes off and then becomes really guttural.
Right.
Which
Well said.
His plays definitely, and I think this is a Brechtian thing as well, they definitely kick you in the sweet spot. They definitely hammer home what they're trying to hammer home, but also create questions and ambivalence that is, to me, so welcome in this kind of play. That is, because Brecht doesn't give a lot of that, right? Brecht is always about like, no, this is how it should be. And even if you agree with him, It's a little too on the nail on the head. Whereas I believe he's creating gray areas. He's creating, especially if we're doing melodrama in Octoroon, we're doing morality play. These things are not things that live in gray area. They live in black and white. They live in, no, morality is morality. That's what Christian morals are Christian morals, right? And he is creating those gray areas and creating the discussions around those. And I think that's why I love him. Anybody wants to say as a final thing about everybody specifically? If not, anything you want to say about Brandon specifically? Because after we rank his plays, we're done with them. This is so sad. It's okay, though.
Yeah, it's okay.
We'll come back.
Yeah.
If somebody has something out, we'll come back. And we should read Appropriate. We should maybe read that and come back in, because we were going back and forth between Gloria and Appropriate. Yeah. And our guest who is the middle guest, Teddy Trice, he was like, Gloria, let's do Gloria. And I was like, okay, great. But now I just want to engage with Appropriate, because right. I haven't
read it yet either.
Any final words you guys want? That's my final word. I want to read another play.
I dig him. I love him. He might be coming out on top over some of my other favorite playwrights that we've covered, to be quite honest.
Damn.
He's certainly the most intriguing.
Over Andrew Lloyd Webber?
Wow. He's up there with Lynn Nottage for me. How's that?
Yeah, Cinderella. How can you top that?
No, I agree. I think that this guy is exciting, and he's challenging, and he's got his finger on a couple different pulses, and I'm very excited to keep. I'm a fan. I'm a stan. I'm going to keep a stan. I'll be a stan for a long time.
We stan a legend.
Stan a legend.
Yeah. Lisa? CJ, you got any final word?
Oh, I already said my final word.
Oh, okay.
It's
Lisa?
Lisa's turn.
Yeah.
It has to him. I was thinking about what you said, you know, Brecht, and I feel like we are in contemporary Western society really obsessed with individualism and personal psychology and that. And so he takes these older forms that aren't really about that. Brecht isn't as psychological as we are. I think it's more about like your role as citizen and, you know, you as a collective. And he like brings that into our like navel gazing, neurotic, self-obsessed, highly personal world. And so the clash of the old and the new and what he has to say about not only our lens back then, but our lens now, I think is really fascinating. And then he'll do something like Gloria, which is just his own fucking thing, which is like, huzzah, also really interesting.
Right.
Because it's not an adaptation, right?
What now?
Say that again.
What was that?
Gloria's not an adaptation.
No,
I don't think so.
Just
straight, I don't know what it would be.
Straight play.
I should look that up.
I just looked up that it was inspired with his time writing for the New Yorker, working with the New Yorker. Not that that event necessarily happened, but just kind of the way people are and how things work.
Yeah. But anyway, yes, I say huzzah to you, Brendan. I hope we keep you for a long time.
Here.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not based on anything. Yeah, it's fully original. Very interesting. Okay, yeah. Well, okay. Can we do my favorite part?
Your favorite thing? I guess we can. I guess we can let you do it.
Bailey loves ranking shit.
Yeah, that's right. I love ranking shit. Lisa, you didn't just hear it, but you'll hear it on the recording. It just went, Bailey loves ranking shit, or whatever. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to rank these three plays that we just covered. 3-2-1. Lisa, since you've engaged with all of them, I'd love to hear your ranking as well, but we're going to start with Scott.
All right, everybody, Gloria and Octoroon.
Okay, so everybody is your number 3, Gloria is your number 2, Octoroon is your number 1.
Correct.
Okay, CJ?
3, and Octoroon, 2, Gloria, 1, everybody.
Wow.
Interesting. Okay, Lisa?
Same as Scott. Everybody, and I love everybody. Everybody.
Yeah. Got it. Okay. I think I'm Gloria number 3, everybody number 2. Yeah, everybody number 2, and Octoroon is definitely my number 1. The other two, I think, I'm excited that we haven't actually recorded our Gloria episode yet. We'll be recording in a couple days. They'll come out opposite each other, but I think once we talk about it, it might grow on me a little bit. I just need to hear other people talk about it because I finished it and was like, okay, interesting, let's talk. Whereas the other two I was like pumped about, if that makes sense. Yeah. So I just need a little more talking about it, but I did really, really enjoy it. It challenged me. I'm excited about that. Yeah, but Nocturne. CJ, you ranked that 3rd.
Yeah, I did. I mean, honestly, I kind of went a little Scott on this ranking because everybody will still be a play that you can do years and years and years from now. The way, like, he took Everyman, an ancient fucking play, and modernized it. I think both An Octoroon and Gloria will be left in the dust a little bit. They'll have to be, you know, like,
ooh,
you know, rewritten. Things will have to be changed, like, because both of those topics are ever changing.
Okay.
Right, yeah,
my 2 cents.
That's
interesting.
Interesting.
I think for actors, you know, like, it is written so that we can all keep doing it, no matter who we are.
Yeah. Absolutely, and it can be done by every theater company on the planet, and it can be done in schools, and it can be done. Yeah, so that's what's exciting about everybody. Okay, cool. Yeah, we did talk about this the other day, actually, CJ, that An Octoroon does have its potentiality of being already a little bit past its time.
It's 2014. I mean, yeah.
Unfortunately, if I wasn't watching everything I was seeing on TV every day, I would agree with you. But the fact that it's like all of a sudden I feel like we're like in the frickin' 20s again.
I don't mean that things have gotten better. I mean, we're viewing it differently and talking about it differently. Is what I mean. I'm not saying like, well, we're so much better now, because we're not. We're not.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it's a play that will change and morph. And I think that's what I've sort of realized about it, is that, yeah, it is going to be viewed differently in 2023, but it's also going to be viewed very differently in 2050 and in the year 3000.
In the year 3000.
In the year 3000.
Okay, let's get out of here. What else do we do?
Dream
rolls.
We
do that thing. The roles that we dream about. Lisa, are there any other roles that you would want to play in the canon of BJJ?
I'm not a dreamer of roles. I thought about this for this. I mean, in Gloria that the Echo did, beautiful production. Jenny Sue fucking killed it in a role that I don't know. Couldn't do better than Jenny Sue, but that role would be dope. And then also Usher. I wanted to, I think Cherish did amazing and I really get why she did it. But I think that would be a really hard and really fun thing to play.
Absolutely. Siege?
I absolutely anyone and everybody I would be interested in. And then also from Gloria, Lauren, Gloria, or Nan.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Cool. Yes. How about y'all?
I would not mind playing what's his name, Barakolt in an Octoroon.
The old playwright.
Yeah, the old Lusical. Playwright.
Dying.
Yeah. Yeah. And then everybody. I would love to do everybody. I would love the challenge of doing that. It just seems like just the experience alone.
It's the hardest fucking thing.
Yeah, I imagine.
The second hardest thing. It was every night I would run the entire show in my head before the show.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah, you'd have to. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
I would, I'd want to play Busicall from, Yep. That's the one.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot to do in it and it's so meta and interesting. Yeah. You could have fun with it. Yeah.
Have fun with that one. That one's intense, but I would love to do it. It would challenge me and give me probably a stomach ulcer, but it's fine. I would love it. Okay. Something else we like to do, because we are based in Los Angeles, is we like to spotlight LA theater. So we can also spotlight a little bit of Pittsburgh theater. Lisa, if you have anything you want to shout out right now, I'd love to hear if you have anything coming up in LA.
LA Spotlight.
I have a workshop of Happy Fall, a queer stunt spectacular with Rogue Artist Ensemble. That's mid-March.
Oh, nice. Cool. Sorry.
No. World premiere next year. It's a rolling with a company out in West Virginia, but we'll be doing an advanced workshop of it. Rogue Artist does pretty intense workshops. And then my play Hungry Ghost is going to be produced by Skylight Theater, and that goes up in August. And then Skylight. Sumo in La Jolla, if you want to come down.
Yeah, we're definitely going to Sumo. Yeah. And then we'll check out the show at Skylight. What was the one at Skylight called again?
It's called Hungry Ghost.
Hungry Ghost. Very cool. Okay, very exciting. If you haven't engaged with Lisa's work, everybody, you should definitely engage with it, because it all rules, including the Welcome to Bloomhouse Live, which I am Scott, CJ, you guys got anything you want to shout out in LA theater?
I just want to go ahead and do the official announcement. We've kind of mentioned it before, but CJ and I are working together again. Sacred Fools is going to be doing Raise Your Hand from the Dead, an original play by Natalie Nicole Dressel, friend of the pod, guest of the pod. Directed by Jay Dutcher, also previous guest on the pod and friend of the pod. But it's a B-movie spoof with some really cool themes and some really cool heart. And it's about a disembodied hand killing people. But CJ and I are both in it and are both co-producing that. And then I'm doing a play
called... Have y'all ever seen Idle Hands, the movie?
Oh, yeah.
Is that Devon Sawa?
Devon Sawa.
What the fuck ever? Shut up.
Hawkeye Casper?
Yes, the kid from Casper.
Oh, my God.
Devon Sawa.
He has his hand. I used that as inspiration for a serial killer I did years ago.
Yeah, that might have been inspiration for this, because it's very similar. Okay. What was the other show you're doing, Scott? Sorry.
Oh, no worries. I'm doing a two-hander called If I'm Good by Ronnie Larson. It's all about the division in America, and it's a nice, intense, very different part for me, and I'm doing it with an old friend from college, Nedra Gallegos, and come check it out at Fringe. Raise Your Hand from the Dead and If I'm Good.
And for me, still a new brain with Celebration Theater. It's going to be at the LA LGBT Center through June 24th. I am seeing it on May 18th, if anyone would like to join me. It's one of my favorite musicals of all time. CelebrationTheaterRE.org.
I don't have anything. I was going to look stuff up and then I forgot. And then I'll find some stuff. I'll post it on the Instagram. Oh, should we get out of here?
Let's get out of here.
Yeah.
Lisa, thank you so very much for joining us. We really, really appreciate it. We're going to have to. It was fun, right? Yeah, we're going to have you on for something that is maybe, because we did four whole seasons, or three whole seasons of just playwrights, and now we're doing kind of anything. We're discussing the definition of theater. We're in different lenses and things, but we decided to do a couple playwright miniseries this year. So I'd love to have you back for like another bonus episode later this year, if you're down for it.
I would love.
Cool. Yeah. So if you think of anything that you're like, I really want to spend an hour and a half talking about this, then send it to us and we will make it happen.
Okay. He's also had some suggestions for playwrights that we haven't even come close to covering yet. So whenever that comes up next.
I would love that list. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We have, our lists are long, but I would love to bump a few in there that we aren't as familiar with. That would be exciting too. Lisa, you rule.
Yeah.
Good times. I hope we can all be friends. We should go, when you're back from Pittsburgh, we should all go get a drink or something.
Say, yeah, dude. Let's see Scott's show.
We will. Jeez. And then we'll see Hungry Ghost. And then we'll see Sumo. We're gonna make it all happen. I'm very, very excited. But thanks all for joining us. CJ. Oh. I got to do my whole thing. Thanks for joining us at Theater. This is the end of Anne Podcasteroon. And next week, we will be covering Clowning with Bonnie Hee. Yes. Very excited about that. We love Bonnie on this podcast.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. It's kind of weird that we haven't had her on yet, but I'm glad that we're getting her. She's just going to talk clowning with us. And CJ, you're friends with Bonnie, right?
Yeah, she's getting ready to take her show, Terrible Show for Terrible People, to Edinburgh. Yeah.
Probably my favorite show from Fringe last year.
It was pretty damn good.
Favorite comedy, that show was.
It won favorite comedy.
Yeah,
I've talked about. Yeah, I know it beat my play that I wrote. It's fine. we were both nominated and I lost. Terrible Show for Terrible People still has the best bit of anything I've ever seen in anything ever. Okay. She has a fucking toilet seat and she holds it and she almost licks it and then she doesn't. And then she almost licks it and doesn't for like 5 minutes. And it was one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my entire life.
It's brilliant.
I will never forget it. So anytime that's playing, I try to see it. It's a good show. Terrible Show for Terrible People.
Yeah.
And then after Clowning, we're doing Grease Live. Fox's live musical Grease.
Is it Lisa's face? What?
Yeah. We're discussing the definition of theater. Is it theater? I don't know. We're going to talk about it.
We'll find out.
Jesse J sings the opening number, and Boyz II Men sings the freaking Beauty School Dropout song. Is it theater? I don't know, but we're going to get deep into it. And then after that is a Scott's pick. Scott, have you decided what you want to cover? Do you know yet?
No, I have not had time to think about it, but I'll get it soon.
It's okay. Right. We still love you.
I know.
Y'all got questions or comments? You can reach out to us via email, Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Scott?
Thank you, CJ. I'm not even drunk. Thank you, CJ. A big shout out to Ryan Thomas Johnson, who writes our theme song. Our theme song is better than your theme song.
Batch.
Yes. Okay. And he also writes all of our stingers, and he's an amazing human being. And finally, to the great award-winning playwright Carol Churchill, who writes every single one of our episodes but doesn't even know it. And one day, Carol Churchill, we're going to buy you a beer.
That's right. She writes our episodes. It used to be Annie Baker. Baker used to write all of our episodes because we said and a lot. But now it's Carol Churchill because we're so absurd and ridiculous and we talk
because
over each
other. Because we're so smart.
But mostly because we talk over each other.
Yes.
We'll buy you a beer one day, Carol. We love you. And Lisa, thanks. We'll
Thank
get you,
you
back
so much,
later
Lisa.
This year.
Pleasure to meet you.
Thanks, friends. Same.
We'll see you guys later. Rate, subscribe, review. It really does help.
Bye.
Let's get out of here, yeah?
Yeah.
I am the very model of a modern major general. I have information, vegetable, no. animal, and mineral. I know the kings of England, and I quote the fights historical, from Marathon to Waterloo in order categorical. I'm very well acquainted, too, with matters mathematical. I
understand. Both the simple and quadratical.
That one, yeah. I never know that one. Yeah. That's it. We're out of here. Bye.
Bye.
Later, everybody.
The theater. The theater.
Theater.